Broadcasting live.
It's America's longest running talk show on computers. It's Computer America, bringing you the biggest names in technology with guest interviews, new products, and your emails. Listen live at ComputerAmerica.com
on any device around the world.
Email the show at live@ComputerAmerica.com or find us on social media.
Be sure to check out our website for contests, giveaways, show notes, live video stream, podcasts, and more.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome everyone into the Computer America Show. We are the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers and technology. Everyone, welcome into the program. Today on the show, we have the one, the only, Mr. Ralph Bond. He'll be joining us. He is our science and tech trends correspondent. And of course, he joins us every single Friday. You can set your clock to it, where we talk about a number of stories that are obviously science and tech related. Ones that you probably haven't heard of. I know that, just look through them just now. And we definitely have not talked about them on the show this week. So, with that being said, let's go ahead and just introduce everything. ComputerAmerica.com, that's where you... There we go. ComputerAmerica.com. That's where you'll find everything, including past shows, future shows, show notes, links to social media, articles, reviews, giveaways, and all that good stuff. So ComputerAmerica.com. The show notes will have everything. Ralph very meticulously puts this together. And, you know, there's going to be links, videos, everything you need to know will be in the show notes every single week. Let's see. So there's that. Also, be sure to check out social media links and, let's go ahead and just bring... Oh, actually, real quick, a very appreciative shout-out to all of the text messages alerting me that you have paid my AT&T bill for the month. I've gotten about 24 of you who have paid my AT&T bill. I never click your links because they look like, scam. But just thank you all out of the kindness of my heart that... ladies and gentlemen, this is a joke. I'm getting inundated with scam text messages that are like, hey, we just paid your AT&T bill. Just, click here. And I never click here, but it's crazy. So with that being said, everyone, Ralph Bond, science and tech trends correspondent, and of course, longtime contributor here to Computer America. Ralph, how you been?
I'm doing great. And hey, I'll pick up on something you're just talking about, scams. Lately, almost every day, I'm getting one or more of these emails saying, well, you haven't logged into your Outlook email account, and you're just going to be suspended by this date if you don't log in and click here. How ridiculous. All day long, I'm using that account day after day. And it said, it's going to be, end by 1st of July. Well, obviously, that's not the case. You were able to send me the links for the show. So, folks, be careful. So careful, because these emails are very cleverly disguised. The sending email looks like a legit Microsoft address, so they're obviously able to cloak these things. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, when I examine it, you can see that the response is to some kind of weird Gmail account or something. And so be careful. Use the viewing pane. If you're an Outlook user, and I'm sure other email services do this too, you can click on an email without really opening it, but kind of view it and see, oh yeah, this is not good. And
that's then, a good tip.
Put it in and block it out and use your email service to block that sender. But they keep regenerating different ways to get to you, but just be careful. So I totally sympathize with what you're saying, and it's so important to be careful. Gosh,
it's especially during the pandemic, we've done stories lately that over 2020 and 2021, like obviously everyone was at home, everyone was trying to not telecommute, yep, but work from home for the first time. Ralph, people clicked on scam links and spam links more in the last 2 years than they ever have before. Like it was rampant during the pandemic because people just didn't know, it looks like a Zoom link, I'll click that. And it's very, very easy to get got. Like personally, the only scam, Ralph, and then we'll get into our stories. I will say that the only scam that I ever fell for was I was working a night shift at my old job, and they called me and they're like, there's a problem with your account. Your card is about to be canceled. And I'm like, that's the only card I have. Like, I kind of need that. And it was like 3 a.m. And they're like, you know, call this number. I called the number, automated. It's like, you know, we know some weird transactions. Please verify that this was your card by entering your card number. And I'm like, and then please enter the digits on the back. And then I talked to my mom about it the next day, and she's like, you need to cancel that card and go get yourself a new one, because I just gave myself over to a scammer. Even when you think you're smart, Ralph, like, it's it just takes one moment of who'd have thunk it. So everyone be safe, but we're here to uplift you, not put you down.
Giving away your more credit downers. Card number.
Yes, exactly. So Ralph, let's just introduce everyone who this may be the first time. What kind of stories do you go for?
Yeah, well, for example, today we're going to have everything from trash eating bugs to a massive underwater system to generate electricity. But Ben, I'll give you my standard spiel about who I am and what I do.
Please do.
I'm an aggregator of science and tech news features I find by monitoring a host of online news outlets. And I look for important and sometimes wild and wacky stories that don't usually capture mainstream press attention. And I'm always on the lookout for news that gives a glimpse into where we're headed, for example, in robotics, medical technology, sustainable energy technology, transportation advances, space research, physics, you name it. And what I do with each news item is present the essential high-level points in what I hope is a digestible form. And as you said at the outset, please, everybody, come out to ComputerAmerica.com. Get the show notes for today's episode, because you can dig deeper. We're going to only do the highlights. If you really want to get into the science and technology, get the show notes and follow the links and get the pictures and all that good stuff.
Yep. And dig deeper is a great way to put that, Ralph, because story number one, something that I think a lot of us, you know, maybe, you know, you're kind of used to worms. Maybe you think they're icky and gross, but it looks like the worms might actually have our backs on this one.
Yes. Yes. Headline: Styrofoam eating superworm could help solve a huge worldwide garbage crisis. Picked up this story first from the Washington Post and from many other sources as well. And it's just like, what? So weird. Anyway, and there's a video here you can show. And recently, scientists from the University of Queensland in Australia showed that the larva of the darkling beetle can survive solely on polystyrene, which is commonly called styrofoam. And by the way, I'm going to add some bonus notes here. The larvae are also known by the common name mealworms. So in the video here, as you're looking, they may look familiar. And I remember, I think my son and I would go to the pet store and buy live mealworms, pardon me, if I could say that, and feed it to his pet lizard, for example. So it's a very common creature. And the research that the Queensland people are doing comes amid a flurry of research recently on ways bacteria and other organisms can consume plastic materials like styrofoam and drinking bottles, the plastic drinking bottles. And by the way, another bonus nugget here, darkling beetles belong to a family of beetles found worldwide, estimated to be more than 20,000 species. What? And darkling beetles eat both fresh and decaying vegetation. But in this case, they're going after styrofoam. Well, back to the story here. The researchers plan to study the enzymes that allow the darkling beetle superworms to digest styrofoam. And their goal is to find a way to transform their research into a commercial product. And here's another bonus nugget. If you're going enzymes, I've heard of this. What is an enzyme? Okay, an enzyme is a biological catalyst and is almost always a protein. It speeds up the rate of a specific chemical reaction in the cell. The enzyme is not destroyed during the reaction and is used over and over again. A cell contains thousands of different types of enzyme molecules, each specific to a particular chemical reaction. So you can dig into the biology of what enzymes are. It's all about your digestion primarily. So going back to the story, if successful, industrial deployment of a natural enzyme-based treatment that they're going to create based on what the darkling larva can do. So if you can get this natural enzyme-based treatment to dispose and recycle styrofoam, this would transform the way waste managers deal with a material that accounts for as much as, and I had no idea about this, so styrofoam accounts for as much as 30% of landfill space worldwide. Holy smokes. So there's hope on the way.
Yeah, that's incredible. And like you said, these are incredibly common animals. We raise and grow them all the time. I do like the idea of, you know, kind of removing the worm from the equation, just having like a chemical that you can send.
Right.
Or,
right.
You know, you could just send the enzyme to treat this stuff.
Right.
And of course, you know, 30% of the space is a big number, but to also yes. put it into another perspective that, it, you know, you can see right here in the article, somewhere right up there, 14 million tons end up in the oceans every single year. And, you know, you can think styrofoam, it's pretty light. You know, it's not heavy at all. So 14 million tons end up
insane.
In the water. So,
yeah,
it's this is definitely solving an issue.
Oh, yeah. And Ben, I don't know about your experience as a consumer, but when I read this article, I said, you know, thinking about all the stuff I get from Amazon or different packaging products and so forth, I'm seeing less and less styrofoam used in packing products that I buy in the last several years. I don't know if that's your experience too. I see more and more just kind of cardboard or molded paper-like stuff.
Yeah, when I get styrofoam peanuts, I get very, very upset because they are the most annoying packing material to deal with. Unfortunately, Ralph, it seems like plastic, you know, those little bags of air seem to have replaced styrofoam in a lot of cases.
Right.
So, you know, more plastic.
That's true.
And I think that a lot of people out there, you know, because, you know, to dispose of styrofoam, you throw it away, it doesn't shrink, it doesn't really do anything, and, you know, it takes 500 years for it to break down in a landfill. You know, this stuff is bulky, you know, wasteful and all that kind of thing. But yeah, if we have a way to safely dispose of it, maybe that, you know, maybe you'll see more styrofoam, Ralph, because there's a way to safely get rid of it. Could be.
Or at least to get rid of what's out there now.
Yeah, that too. So there you go. And that is definitely off our usual news beat, but it's very, very helpful because, hey, let's face it, you know, buy a pair, go to the store right now, buy a pair of speakers, almost guaranteed they're going to be in styrofoam. You know, it's by any computer part or any electronic, and it's going to come with styrofoam. So, okay. So there's that one. Story number one, definitely different. Ralph, we have all these worms everywhere now. Story number two, let's get rid of them with some fish.
Yeah, well, and it's kind of a closely related story when you talk about styrofoam and other plastics getting into our water, the oceans and fresh water supply. This story really relates to that, kind of a nice follow-on. The headline here is, scientists create bionic robotic fish to remove microplastics from the Earth's oceans and our water supplies. And I got this from the UK's Guardian newspaper. Really fun, kind of a fun, wild, curious story. But here we go. Microplastics in our oceans and freshwater sources is one of the biggest environmental problems today. I think everybody listening to this show goes, yeah, I know that. But again, just to be sure everyone's on track here, microplastics are the billions of tiny plastic particles which fragment from bigger plastic things such as water bottles, car tires, synthetic t-shirts, and of course, on and on and on, so many other plastic products, right? And a little more detail here I've added to the notes on the fly this morning before we got on together here. Microplastics are fragments of any type of plastic less than 5 millimeters or 0.20 inches in length. So that gives you the idea of the size of what we're talking about. Kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the problem. Here's why microplastics are a problem. They could have a damaging impact on aquatic and terrestrial life with their ability to absorb toxic chemicals and then release them in an animal's digestive system, including this animal right here.
Yeah, humans.
Now, to the story. To combat microplastics, scientists at the Polymer Research Institute of Sichuan University in China recently announced a remarkable new weapon in this war against microplastics. They created a tiny robot fish that can remove microplastics from the Earth's oceans and freshwater bodies by swimming around and absorbing them on its soft, flexible body. Okay.
Yeah.
And get this, measuring only about 1/2 inch in length, I mean, we're talking tiny, the tiny self-propelled robofish can swim around, latch onto free-floating microplastics, and even self-heal its synthetic body if it gets cut or damaged. Another interesting nugget, it uses a light-activated propulsion system in its tail. So with that system, the robofish can swim at a speed of about 1.2 inches a second. And that's similar to the speed at which plankton drift around in moving water, by the way. And then here's a little bit about how this all works. So here's how the Sichuan University robofish can absorb nearby free-floating bits of microplastics. Here's how it works. The organic dyes and heavy metals in the microplastics have strong chemical bonds that cause an electrostatic interaction that attracts them to the materials that make up the robofish's body. So that's how it works. Good old electrostatic.
Right.
But time for a reality check. In fairness, the Sichuan University team itself stressed that it's just a proof of concept and much more research is needed. And maybe you've been thinking this all along as I've been giving out the story too, Ben. First, my take on this. First, you would need trillions upon trillions of these tiny robot fish to significantly tackle the challenge of microplastics in our oceans and fresh water sources, right? And then another thought is, okay, you deploy, let's say you could deploy countless trillions of these things and they're out there doing their thing. How do you collect these guys once they've done their job? And how do you process and dispose of them or whatever, right? But I don't, not to be a downer Debbie here, I still give this idea an A+ for creativity.
No,
it's
Ralph,
just
that,
such a that, curious idea.
That's actually the cool part. The fish actually break down into microplastics. So, you know, when they're done with their job, they actually break down into microplastics and you don't even see them anymore. It's very, very cool.
That's great. Thank you.
That was by the way, that was a complete joke. The fish to collect microplastics do not break down into microplastics. I hope not.
Well, I was going to say that wouldn't be good.
Yes, that would defeat the whole purpose. But no, and for a lot of people out there wondering how big of a problem, like I know that it's not, you know, like the daily thing that people worry about anymore. But Ralph, I'm sure you living on, you know, on the West Coast know this. About the Pacific Garbage Patch, and I think that that used to be a big topic of conversation. It's not even so much like, you know, a big island of garbage, and you know, you may still find patches of floating garbage, but it's more just a giant area the size of, like, you know, Texas.
I think I heard it was the size of Texas, right?
Yeah. It's like the size of Texas, and it looks like just open blue water, but it's in actuality, it's just littered. It's just inundated with microplastics. So that's the kind of problem that they're trying to solve.
Yeah.
And any solution, especially fish-based, is pretty cool. To your questions, just the first one, how to collect them. I will say, Ralph, it sounds a lot easier to collect half-inch little fish than it does to collect tiny microplastics. So maybe a giant net, maybe they're programmed to kind of float up to the top when they're spent. I don't know what it could be, but
it's a possible solution. And I didn't see anything in the articles I looked at on this topic that explained what happens after they're deployed. Mm-hmm. So when you first did your joke about they break down, and I thought, oh, did I miss something at first? You got
no,
me.
No. That was a complete joke. I'm sorry. I should not have said that.
No,
so
that's okay.
Straight-faced. I probably, let's see. Ooh, I have something for this. I probably should have followed it up with a, but I didn't. So there you go. So everyone, that was story number two, and really just an off the wall kind of idea. But it goes to show that, you know, there are universities all over the world that are looking at our problems, and they have some of the smartest people trying to solve them. So there's hope.
Yeah.
There's hope for all of this.
Definitely. Yep.
So story number three, let's go a little bit different here and solve another problem. And, yes. You know, this is, Rob, I can't even imagine this, because when I think about steel manufacturing, I always think, like, you know, the pits of hell, the giant yes. moving vats of, it's just a very yes. pre-industrial, it's a very chaotic kind of thing. I can't imagine doing this, more efficiently. So story number three was surprising to me.
Right. And friends, this is a snarky comment on my part, but when you hear the story, just give it a few years and the Supreme Court will figure out some way to, curb this wonderful innovation. But with that said, I don't want to be negative. That's right. This is all supposed to be uplifting
positive,
today.
Positive.
All right, here we go. Headline. Now, there's a new steel manufacturing technology that does not rely on fossil fuels. I got this from ArsTechnica.com, and you can see the image here of a traditional blast furnace, but let's get into the story here. More than 2 billion, with a B, tons of steel are produced annually worldwide. But here's the problem. Steel making accounts for 7 to 11% of global greenhouse gas emissions. Wait a minute, 7 to 11%. Wow. Making it one of the largest industrial sources of atmospheric pollution. And here's why. Most steel is made using a process that involves extracting iron from its ores using a coke smelting process in a blast furnace. And the coke used in the smelting process is produced by heating coal, of course, a fossil fuel, at high temperatures. And then this coke is used to fuel a blast furnace to make steel by chemically reducing and physically converting iron oxides into liquid iron, which is called hot metal. All right, so the bottom line is, it's all a very climate unfriendly fossil fuel based process. As Ben, you were alluding to, it's something that's kind of been unchanged for 100 and some odd years or whatever. Brutal industrial stuff. But now, time for the uplifting good news. Boston Metal, an outfit called Boston Metal, which is a spinoff from, guess what, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, recently revealed a game-changing alternative to traditional coke fuel-based blast furnaces. They created an electrolysis process for making steel that uses electricity instead to separate iron from its ores. And electrolysis, by the way, is an electrochemical process that uses direct electric current to separate chemical compounds into their constituent parts. Wow. So with its new electrolysis process, Boston Metal claims it can make steel without releasing carbon dioxide, helping to clean up one of the world's worst industries for greenhouse gas emissions. Wow. I mean, if this gets deployed, if it's commercially viable in terms of cost and so on and so forth, and if the electricity that's used in this process, Ben, is coming from renewable sources, wind, solar, water, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
Wow, this could be a formula for a really better world when you think 7 to 11% of greenhouse gas emissions coming from making steel alone. That's a huge, huge chunk of the problem.
Yeah, it just takes so much energy and heat and just to melt it all down, scrape away the stuff on top, scrape away the slag, get the liquid metal. And of course, all this, you have to keep it at, 2,000 degrees, whatever it may be. Ralph, if you can just do this chemically with electricity, I mean, you're cutting out so much of that. Now, of course, that electricity is going to have to come from somewhere. And, let's face it, they're already burning fuel to do the initial part. It's just, man, it's such a better solution that I think, 100 and 150 years ago, they didn't even know about. And now we can maybe turn this around and scale it up, and it'll be something very, very cool. So everyone, if you've been watching the video portion, we were checking out their product videos. And of course, there's a link to Boston Metal there in the Ars Technica article as well. but very, very cool. And like you said, Ralph, shoot off of MIT.
Yay.
Just goes to show just how, you're right. They have smart people working there, but what they do better than I think a lot of other universities is that they actually, start businesses and try to start making these things commercially viable. And that's something that MIT excels at.
Yes. Absolutely.
So there you go. Story number three, our final one. Story number four, we're going back to the water. And this one is, so much of technology, like the first thing that you learn with technology as a human is electricity and water don't mix. And, growing up in Florida, Ralph, and of course, you're near our coast too. Whenever a friend drops a phone in the ocean, you're like, that phone is toast. You just got to get another one. Salt water is so bad for electronics. It's just awful. So I always find it, kind of ironic that we're turning to the ocean. I mean, just about a year ago, Ralph, we did a story, I think it was you, where Microsoft was putting their servers underwater because, because servers get super hot and, the temperatures of the deep, deep ocean keep it much, much cooler. And it was very energy efficient because you didn't have to spend anything. I always love it, Ralph, when we turn to the ocean to help with technology because they're so anti one another. So story number four.
It is ironic. Yeah. So here's the headline for this story. New world's largest underwater turbine generates electricity using deep ocean currents. And I picked this story up first from futurism.com and then also some supplementary research in a Bloomberg story. And once again, the show notes folks have the links, pictures, everything here. Please get the show notes if you want to dig deeper. And Ben, you're showing the picture of this huge thing, but let's get into this. The idea of using ocean power to generate electricity, it's not new. That's not what we're saying here. For years, we've had research and deployment of ocean wave, tidal, and ocean current electricity generating solutions. Now, just as a little sidebar, which I added this morning before we got on the phone together here, or on the connection together, the possible use of marine currents as an energy resource began to draw attention in the mid-1970s after the first oil crisis. And I'm an old enough guy to remember that very clearly. Mm-hmm. In 1974, several conceptual designs were presented at the MacArthur Workshop on Energy. And in the 1976, the British General Electric Company undertook a partially government-funded study, which concluded that marine current power deserved more detailed research. Well, sure did. Here we are all these many years later. So going back to our story, although this device or this system is not the world's first ocean current generating solution, this new ocean current based generating solution, to repeat myself, from a heavy machinery outfit in Japan called IHI Corporation, it grabbed my attention, Ben, because of its remarkable size. The recently tested prototype, and again, viewers of this show can see the picture, it's a massive 330 ton underwater system measuring about 66 feet long and 66 feet wide.
Oh, it looks like in the picture, Ralph, it looks like three individual pods, but I see now that they're connected with those, with those arms between them. This
exactly.
is all one unit. That's incredible.
Yeah, it is. And if you're not able to see the picture as we're speaking here, let me give you a quick visual. This giant machine somewhat resembles a passenger jet airplane with two jet engines, so to speak. And the central tube-shaped fuselage houses a buoyancy adjustment system. Once anchored to the sea floor, the center buoyancy unit enables the entire three-part system to hover between 100 and 160 feet below the surface to capture strong ocean currents. And on the underside of the central flotation unit is a crossbar, which you can see in the picture if you have that in front of you, that connects the cylindrical shaped turbine units, one on the left, one on the right, which would be in the analogy to the engines of a jet airplane, right? Each turbine unit measures about 36 feet in diameter and contains powerful counter-rotating turbine fans to generate electricity from ocean currents. Now, IHI Corporation's recent first successful test was conducted off the eastern coast of Japan to take advantage of very powerful currents present in that area. Mm-hmm. And IHI Corp's ultimate goal is to deploy numerous systems in the Kuroshio, I hope I'm saying that right, current off eastern Japan to generate as much as 200 gigawatts, which would equal about 60% of Japan's present generating capacity, and they have plans to kick off commercial operations in the next decade. So how great is this? And you know, one of the things that was pointed out in the article as well that I didn't mention is, you know, solar's great, wind's great, but they're weather dependent in a way, right? Right. Ocean currents are just this kind of wonderful constant source of potential energy generation. So that's another reason why this is so exciting. And if you could deploy these things without messing up the environment and not messing up shipping lanes and whatever the case may be, right, we could have hundreds, thousands of these things. Wow. What a great way to generate electricity in a constant, consistent, and reliable way.
For sure. It's the fact that it hovers, it doesn't settle on the ground, potentially damaging, you know, any kind of ecosystems that may be down there. Hopefully, yeah, it doesn't generate too much sound, you know, so that whatever wildlife is in the area, you know, doesn't get affected, Ralph, because I know that's a problem with like whales and stuff and, you know, the very sensitive
sound.
Yeah,
that's true.
But I doubt that would be the case. Let's face it, Ralph. I mean, ocean currents are just solar in another form, you know, just like wind is solar in another form. It's just the heat from the sun moving the ocean currents, going from hot to cold areas. It's constant. It's very, very powerful. And if we can harvest that, I mean, hey, 60% of Japan's current power generating potential, that is, you know, that's a lot of energy just for something that people won't have to see, people won't have to deal with. It'll be low enough. This is so great.
Yeah, I think that whole field of ocean current electrical generation, which again, I want to stress, folks, we're not talking about the very first in the world, but the biggest so far.
Yeah, no, this thing is definitely huge. So, Ralph, I think with that, there's, of course, some more details there in the show notes that you should definitely check out, computeramerica.com. And everyone will have this up on YouTube. And on top of that, we'll have a link to Ralph's site where if you want more Ralph, hey, these stories, as we always say, they're timeless. Because they're cutting edge. They're so cutting edge. They're research. They're coming out. They're just getting deployed. Hey, his shows are always relevant for years to come. Ralph, thank you so much for coming back onto the program. And everyone else, we hope you have a great weekend. You do something fun. You try to keep your mind off of the news. And hey, you do something for yourself. Go out there and make yourself happy. So, Ralph, thank you again. And everyone, see you here next time. ComputerAmerica.com. Bye, everyone.